This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
I'm Aaron Sagers, and this is Talking Strange.
Hey there, spooky nerds, and welcome to Talking Strange, the paranormal pop culture podcast. I am your host, Aaron Sagers, from 28 Days Haunted on Netflix and Paranormal Caught on Camera on Travel Channel. Now airing its seventh season, and I'm coming at you from a phone booth in the airport and trying to record a little bit of audio on the run from traveling from points unknown to other points slightly known and dealing with travel delays and all sorts of fun travel stuff. And that's why I'm recording here instead of in my typical space. But I am excited to pass along this interview. I recorded this one a while back. This was, I guess, back in March that I recorded this, and now we could finally release it. Of course, I'm talking today to Nicolas Cage, or at least that's the episode today. I spoke to him a couple weeks ago, as I said. And I'm talking to the Cage about his new movie, Arcadian. And that is available on Amazon Prime and will be dropping soon on AMC Plus and Shudder. And Arcadian officially, the synopsis, is a father and his twin teenage sons fight to survive in a remote farmhouse at the end of the world. Now, at the time when I conducted this recording, I had not been able to see Arcadian, but I have since, because now it's on Amazon Prime, as I said. And this is, you know, I think this is a really fun and tight monster movie, post-apocalyptic movie. It's about families, but it's a creature feature. I mean, it's about families, but it's a creature feature. And the monsters in these, man, they're great. The less I say about it, I actually really enjoyed the take on these creatures. Now, I was joined by Nick Cage, as well as director Benjamin Brewer, writer Michael Nylon, and as well as actors Maxwell Jenkins and Sadie Soverall. And this, let's cut to it. I'm kind of dancing around this. It's freaking awesome talking to Nick Cage, okay? The guy walks in, he commands a room, he's a true movie star, and if you didn't see this on social media, I was wearing my spooky nerd hat, which you too can acquire at spookynerdshop.com, and a Western-esque shirt with skulls on it. Nick Cage rolls in to the room at the South by Southwest Studios with Den of Geek. We're going to sit down for this recording, and he says, "I like your hat, and I have your shirt." So I got a twofer compliment from Nick Cage about my outfit. And, you know, again, the shirt, I think you can acquire out there. But the hat, you can only get at spookynerdshop.com. So that is a shameless plug. Anyhow, I think there's some cool moments in this interview. It kind of gets off to a slow start. That's probably because of me. Because Cage walks in with all this energy and a lot of other people, studio publicists and everything. And I don't know, it's not that I was intimidated, but man, it was just a lot of energy. So we get off to a slow start, but then I think we get rolling. We talk about some cool things like sci-fi and monsters and whatnot. So check it out. For the movie Arcadian, we've got Nicolas Cage, as well as Maxwell Jenkins, Sadie Soverall, director Benjamin Brewer, and writer Michael Nylon. Let's get to it.
First off, I mean, speaking of nightmare fuel,
monsters, these things we deal with in this flick, are very unlike anything I've really seen before. But I kind of want to get a little bit of the background of what attracted you, Nick, to this movie, and Ben, sort of the backstory of these creatures in this world. So start with you. What was sort of the attraction to this?
Well, the attraction is, for me, it's an experiment because it's a mashup of two of my favorite genres. One, independently spirited family drama specifically, and then on the other side, science fiction and horror. Science fiction in this case, and putting the two together. I wanted to experiment with, can I develop a family which was not unlike my own upbringing? My dad did most of the heavy lifting. He did the raising because my mom sadly couldn't be around. So it was just my father, and in this case, myself and my older brother. I saw that family dynamic in the Kazan picture East of Eden, and then I thought, well, wouldn't it be interesting if this little family nucleus was contending with a post-apocalyptic environment and with an evolution in a species that was there to wipe us out? So you collide those two together. That, to me, seemed like it could be a challenge and it could be effective.
And Mike and Ben, as far as fleshing out this world, well, Mike, what was sort of the initial inception of this world and what you and Ben kind of wanted to bring to life with it?
Well, the initial inception, you know, it came from a story that I told my kids over COVID, where the sort of leads were based upon them, and then tried to create, you know, a horrific scenario and a predator that was reality-based that was hunting a family.
I really responded to the family stuff. I think that in films like this, it's rare to get such a focus on things like that in a way that they really ring true. Like, it really reminded me of growing up with my brother. And so I think in a way, like, you know, Nick and Mike really had a perspective as bringing it as fathers. And I really kind of was thinking of it as being the kids and the sons. And so I kind of, certainly working with Mike when we were getting ready to shoot, I really felt like that was sort of the thing I interjected, was this the boy perspective looking up at their father. And yeah, I just love the idea of that story happening in a world that had fallen apart.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of the world falling apart, Maxwell and Sadie, movie starts out, the world has very much fallen apart, and while you're playing the father, you guys are the younger generation that has inherited this mess, and you're kind of dealing with a lot of the mistakes that previous generations have made. Did you find that relatable at all in 2024?
Yeah, certainly relatable. I think what drew me most to the character, and this was before knowing the incredible people who were doing the project, but initially when I read the script, what drew me most was that it Thomas's growth throughout this is a pretty relatable coming of age story, but he's set in a world where he can't come of age and he can't stretch his arms and there are constraints on him, and where one mistake all of a sudden has these incredibly high stakes. And in a totally different way, instead of, you know, monsters, we have the internet, or we have hyper-globalized society where everything is known by people halfway around the world. So I guess maybe that was in there at some level. I think the biggest thing for us when we went to do that is yes, we are these the first generation of a new world, but I don't think it was any different than living life on a normal scale. I think the biggest thing was establishing that a lot of this stuff that we do, surviving every night, the boarding up the houses, it is kind of as mundane as doing your chores, so that when I make the mistake to be out and skip doing my chores, the whole world collapses. But it adds this level of groundedness to the whole situation. It's not supernatural. It is completely natural. This could happen. This is totally real life. Every day I go up and I do this window and I know exactly how this pulley system works to lower down the shutters, and we have dinner every night and we say grace and we light the lamps at at dinner and eat as a family. So in a haunting way, it's almost like we're trying to hang on to this real world. And as far as I know, this is completely normal.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting correlation, though. I hadn't thought of that. Like, the internet and AI are the monster that's eating people.
100%.
You know? You just look wherever consuming. You know, just look where, you know, there it's there.
And frankly, not knowing what shape it's going to take from moment to moment.
Which is also a great complexity that Ben and Alex put to the creatures, because they keep transmogrifying, they keep changing. One minute they kind of look like a primate, next minute kind of like a reptile, then they have these chatterbox moves with their mouths and the fingers can extend. I mean, it just keeps, and there's roaches involved. It's a strange level of detail for the one creature.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think something also about the creatures that was really interesting, that I think it was you who told me this when we first met, was that these creatures aren't these like all powerful monsters. Humans can put up a fight to a creature. It's almost like it's an animal. It's not this alien species or that kind of deal. It is like an animal that evolved to be more powerful than us, but we can still put up a fight and they're killable, which almost is creepier in a way. It really grounds it in reality.
And to that end, I think it was also important to Ben, you know, there is kind of sympathy for the creature at some points. And also the idea that there's a scene with Maxwell where the people abduct him, and they're scarier than the creatures at that point. And I like that showing that level of distinction, you know, that we're all kind of terrifying in this world.
Very true. And Sadie, I want you to weigh in on this as well. Talk about the monsters, talk about this world.
Of course. I think one point of relatability actually that I find quite poignant, especially when Mike said that he wrote it during the lockdown. I think it's like these kids have kind of lived in a lockdown their whole lives. They haven't seen the stars, they can't go out at night. And I think that was a big point of reference for me, where I could kind of clock into what that would feel like. I mean, after a few months of it, we all were going crazy. So I think that felt really real and really like a great in for the character for me. Yeah.
Science fiction, oftentimes, our threats reflect our times, right? And previously, maybe there were giant monsters as a result of, you know, nuclear fallout and radiation. And then we had, you know, we have giant robots or, you know, Terminator level threats. When you have this amorphous creature, when you have this sort of isolated world, do you think audiences are, this is reflecting where audiences are as well, in a time of UFO, UAP, congressional hearings, and global lockdowns, and threats that we can't quite put our finger on? Do you think that this is sort of where everyone is, I guess, psychologically? They're ready for this kind of threat?
I do. I think that it's relevant. You know, when I saw Terminator, Terminator 2, it seemed like marvelous science fiction and something to fantasize about, and here we are talking about AI, you know, and it looks like it's happening, and it could happen even more now than in the 80s. So it seems like it's something that it is on people's minds, whether it's conscious or subconscious. They're aware of what's happening with the environment. The reason why Godzilla is so effective is he's a response to radiation, and it was Japan's way of processing what happened with Hiroshima. And it endures, you know, and I think that is the case in this small movie, that we're talking about something that it could happen and it is on people's minds, consciously or subconsciously.
Mm-hmm. As a producer, a screenwriter, and director, is there more backstory to these entities, to this world? And might we see more of the Arcadian universe?
I would say maybe. You know, there's certainly...
No, you got to give me more than maybe. Come on. You wrote this. Did you think about this larger world that of these creatures?
No, I didn't really think too much about what the backstory, the specific backstory of the characters was, because I wanted the people to find that on their own. I wanted, you know, the actors to find it their own, for Ben to find it on their own, and to take it from there. You know, given what it has become, I think that there's room for a lot more storytelling. Yeah.
I love what I think what's at the core of it, and the idea of what these creatures represent, which is sort of holding humanity in judgment. They're just there to try to clean the planet of us. I think that that's always going to be a good pressure against a story about what we value about ourselves. You know, I love a film that I remember watching before this was Ugetsu, which is a kind of a Japanese horror film, where what is the fear in that film is that you'll lose people, you'll lose who matters, and it's such a beautiful thing, way to make a horror movie. I've never seen something like that.
I love that movie. It's one of the best movies ever made.
We gotta talk Ugetsu then. But yeah, so I think that I would love to see movies like that. And so if Arcadian had more movies, I'd hope it was just always about what's worth holding on to here, you know? Because in the film, I'm gonna be quick about this, but you know, there's a farm near them. So they're raising themselves in this very small world where Paul, Nick's character, is trying to teach him about how to maybe rebuild this place. And the farm nearby, they're kind of just trying to recreate what was there. They're creating structures that we know fail us, these kind of capitalist structures where it's this kind of farm where they kind of have some people working on it and subsistence level. And we see the folly of that. You know, we see that actually just immediately foments this aggressive human behavior. And so, yeah, I love the idea of movies that just keep, even if they're a horror film or science fiction or anything else, just keep accessing some sort of spiritual experience of what it is to be a person. I think that's fun.
Science fiction is important to me, as I know it's important to you, because it is freedom of speech. You know, you put it on a different planet, or you put it in the future a little bit, and you can pretty much say what you need to say without everybody like trying to stop it or crush it. You know, you can be very tactical in the way you want to tell the story so that people will receive it without putting it down and not giving it a chance. Mm-hmm.
With this kind of monster, with this kind of threat, something that I find really kind of compelling is that because of the sort of changing shape, and we're constantly seeing different aspects and elements to it, in a way it could feel like a very personalized kind of boogeyman. And it was just kind of making me think, like, what was your monster growing up? What was the thing hiding in the dark or living under the earth that you were afraid of? Was there any kind of spooky thing that terrified you as a kid, a very personalized boogeyman?
I remember having a fever. I had the flu as a child. Maybe I was like 4 or 5, and Wizard of Oz came on, and I'm watching The Wicked Witch of the West with a fever dream state going on, and just got impregnated in my imagination, and I couldn't shake it. And then Lon Chaney as the Phantom of the Opera, looking through a keyhole, his eye, and it just spooked me. Or when the mask came off, he's at the piano. Kept going on repeat in my nightmares, or even little ventriloquist dummies, you know. All those elements were kind of terrifying to me as a child, which is the most impressionable time.
What about the rest of you guys? I mean, especially when you're acting against, you know, this monster that may or may not be there, CGI or whatever, what's sort of the boogeyman that you might envision, the thing that scares you?
Trying to imagine the actual monster and find the fear in that monster. I think, like I said earlier, the fact that it was this kind of grounded in reality thing was definitely a way in. I think, imagining, really committing myself to the imagination side of it is how I attacked it. In terms of what scared me as a kid, not a whole lot, but I think I remember being so deeply unsettled by James and the Giant Peach. And to this day, that is still like an uncomfortable look to a movie for me.
The insects.
The whole look of it. Yeah. Not to say I don't like it. It just really unsettled me. So maybe that was somewhere in this. But I do think I really just committed myself to imagining that monster, and I think it was great. You're not always lucky to have an amazing VFX team and an amazing crew pre-production, and they actually, although it was slightly different, we had sketches of what we thought the monster was going to be like, and the clacking of the teeth was all there, so you could really imagine in your own way what the fear of that would be.
Yeah. You know, I want to just say that it's amazing how inventive or artistic people can be when there's less money. You know, it's the age-old story. You know, it's like Cabin of Dr. Caligari. The reason why you have those marvelous, avant-garde, surrealist cardboard sets is because they didn't have the money to go and shoot in big locations. They had to use their mind and their imagination to create this nightmare world, which added so much to the flavor of the piece. And so we're not working with $100 million, but we're working with really creative people. This is maybe 10% of, you know, the Quiet Place movies, but because of the imagination and the level of artistry that Ben and Alex have, they're able to really apply themselves and come up with a solution that might be even more inventive and creative.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you look through the course of history, it tends to work out pretty well when the shark is broken, you know, when you have to imagine it.
Perfect analogy.
So, but Sadie, how about you? I want to hear about what your monster is that you're seeing out there when you're thinking of it.
I didn't find it super hard to suspend disbelief just because of Ben and because of all the wonderful people in the sets. I mean, Zach Stoltz, our VFX supervisor, would wear the gloves for us, and it was great. It was really a really supportive crew, and that was lovely. But I kind of don't really imagine. I kind of imagine the monster of its own. I kind of want to stay in that world, but I had a lot of things that scared me when I was a child. The main one was the child snatcher from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. That is like chilling to me now. But a recent one actually that I saw that Ben recommended, this film Night of the Hunter. And oh my gosh, the performance in that from, oh, what's his name? Robert Mitchum. That's like nightmare fuel. It's phenomenal though.
Yeah.
It's amazing. That's Charles Laughton's only directorial feature, and he just crushed it. It was a masterpiece right off the get-go.
And the initial designs of the creature was based on what scared me as a kid, which was a Disney movie. When Mike first sent me the script, I was interested in like putting my own stamp on the monsters, and Mike was like, yeah, do it, that's great. And I thought, thank you, because like as a director, putting so much work in this, it'd be great if I could like really think hard about what this thing is that's attacking them. And so my first attempt at it, back to like what Nick was saying on these small movies, it's very blue sky. It's like, yeah, you're just creative, you're artistic, there isn't a big committee. And so what scared me as a kid, I remember distinctly, was a Goofy movie. And there's this one scene in a Goofy movie where Goofy's son, Max, is having a dream that he's becoming his father, which felt very relevant to this, but it actually did freak me out. And so there's like, he's like transforms into Goofy, his teeth get big. And so I was like, oh, the monster should look like midway between Goofy's son and Goofy. And so then I drew this thing, and I was working on it and thinking about it. And again, like I don't turn away from ideas. I like ideas, I pursue them. But then I was like, all right, I'm gonna show it to Nick. And I showed it to Nick, and Nick looked at it, and he was like, I can't kill this.
That was a really big moment and a huge day for me, because I just finished, I think it was maybe dream scenario, and I got on a plane and I went to Ireland, and I go, just make sure the monsters are scary. Just make sure the monsters are scary. I go to a little hotel room in Dublin, and then I said, okay, Ben, what's the monster gonna look like? And he pulls out this picture that he drew, and it looks like a Goofy plush toy. Dude, no, come on, think praying mantis, think insect, come on, it's gotta be scary, I'm not killing that. And it was just like, oh my God, what's Ben doing? But I saw the picture for the first time last night, and I think he did an incredible job, because as I said, it keeps changing. It keeps, one minute is it kind of likable, and the next minute it's menacing, and the next minute it's got this weird relationship with cockroaches. I mean, the whole thing is, and the sound and the chatterbox, you know, but he terrified. That was the scariest moment on the shoot, that picture, that drawing of Goofy plush toy.
I love that, and I know exactly what you're talking about from the Goofy movie, so I appreciate it. And weirdly, it's the amalgamation of Goofy into a monster still kind of connects to the notion of parents and the monsters that we're creating for our kids, I guess.
I want it to look like the aliens from Quatermass in the Pit, the old Hammer film,
yeah.
Like the sort of mantis face, demonic face, but he wasn't having it. He wanted to go full Goofy.
Full Goofy. On that very strange note, guys, thank you so much for joining me at the Denny Geek Studios for Arcadian. And that was The Cage, Nicolas Cage. Wow, I just said that like a radio DJ. The Cage, Nicolas Cage, for Arcadian, along with Sadie Soverall, Benjamin Brewer, Michael Nylon, Maxwell Jenkins. And again, it was great talking to Cage. After the interview cut, we were actually chatting a little bit longer. We were talking about Dracula, because I enjoyed that movie he was in last year, Renfield. And we talked a little bit about Dracula because I'm a Dracula nerd and I'm heading to Transylvania again in the fall for a Halloween trip with Mysterious Adventures. It's sold out, sadly, but you can check it out. I know I'm doing an Ireland trip in Halloween during Halloween in 2025. But talk to Nicolas Cage about all things Dracula since I have a bit of a specialty knowledge in it. And yeah, so great time. Hopefully picked up a little bit of info on the Arcadian film, creature feature, post-apocalyptic, family, drama, all those things. I don't want to spoil too much. I do want you to check it out on Amazon Prime and coming soon to Shudder and AMC Plus. Okay, folks, that was the Nicolas Cage interview. Woohoo! Well, until next time. I am Aaron Sagers. I mean, even next time, I will still be Aaron Sagers. But this has been Talking Strange. And remember, be kind, stay spooky, and keep it weird.
Talking Strange is a part of the Den of Geek Network, available wherever you listen to other podcasts. If you like what we're doing, share Talking Strange with your friends and fellow spooky nerds. And please, subscribe, rate, and leave a nice review. If you have a strange or paranormal story you would like to share with us, please email talkingstrange@denofgeek.com for a chance to have it read on a future episode. For video episodes of Talking Strange, check out twitch.tv/denofgeektv and youtube.com/denofgeekus. And please follow @talkstrangepod on Twitter and @AaronSagers on Twitter, Instagram, and Patreon for more paranormal pop culture content.